Book 10, Canto 4, Section 5. And Savitri looked on death and answered not. Almost it seemed as if in his symbol shape the world's darkness had consented to heaven light, and God needed no more the inconscience screen. A mighty transformation came on her. A halo of the indwelling deity, the immortal's luster that had lit her face and tinted its radiance in her body's house, overflowing, made the air a luminous sea. In a flaming moment of apocalypse, the incarnation thrust aside its veil. A little figure in infinity, yet stood and seemed the Eternal's very house, as if the world's center was her very soul, and all wide space was but its outer robe. A curve of the calm outer of far heaven, descending into earth's humility, her forehead's span vaulted the omniscient's gaze. Her eyes were two stars that watched the universe. The power that from her being's summit reigned, the presence chambered in lotus secrecy, came down and held the center in her brow, where the mind's lord in his control room sits. There, throned on concentration's native seat, he opens that third mysterious eye in man, the unseen's eye that looks at the unseen when light with a golden ecstasy fills his brain, and the Eternal's wisdom drives his choice, and Eternal will seizes the mortal's will. It stirred in the lotus of her throat of song, and in her speech throbbed the immortal word. Her life sounded with the steps of the world soul, moving in harmony with the cosmic thought. As glides God's Son into the mystic cave, where hides his light from the pursuing gods, it glided into the lotus of her heart and woke in it the force that alters fate. It poured into her navel's lotus depth, lodged in the little life nature's narrow home. On the body's longings grew heaven rapture's flower, and made desire a pure celestial flame, broke into the cave where coiled world energy sleeps, and smote the thousand-hooded serpent force that blazing towered and clasped the world self above, joined matter's dumbness to the spirit's hush, and filled earth's acts with the spirit's silent power. Thus changed, she waited for the word to speak. Eternity looked into the eyes of death, and darkness saw God's living reality. Then a voice was heard that seemed the stillness self, or the low calm utterance of infinity when it speaks to the silence in the heart of sleep. I hail thee, almighty and victorious death, thou grandiose darkness of the infinite. O void that makest room for all to be, hunger that gnawest at the universe, consuming the cold remnants of the suns, and eatst the whole world with thy jaws of fire, waster of the energy that has made the stars, inconscience, carrier of the seeds of thought, nescience in which all knowledge sleeps entombed and slowly emerges in its hollow breast, wearing the mind's mask of bright ignorance. Thou art my shadow and my instrument. I have given thee thy awful shape of dread, and thy sharp sword of terror and grief and pain to force the soul of man to struggle for light on the brevity of his half-conscious days. Thou art his spur to greatness in his works, the whip to his yearning for eternal bliss, his poignant need of immortality. Live, death, a while, be still my instrument. One day, man too shall know thy fathomless heart of silence and the brooding peace of night and grave obedience to eternal law and the calm, inflexible pity in thy gaze. But now, O timeless mightiness, stand aside and leave the path of my incarnate force. Relieve the radiant God from thy black mask. Release the soul of the world called Satyavan. Freed from thy clutch of pain and ignorance, that he may stand master of life and fate, man's representative in the house of God, the mate of wisdom and the spouse of light, the eternal bridegroom of the eternal bride. She spoke. Death, unconvinced, resisted still, although he knew, refusing still to know, although he saw, refusing still to see. Unshakable, he stood, claiming his right. His spirit bowed, his will obeyed the law of its own nature, binding even on God's. The two opposed each other face to face. His being, like a huge fort of darkness, towered. Around it, her light grew, an ocean's siege. A while, the shade survived, defying heaven, assailing in front, oppressing from above, a concrete mass of conscious power, he bore the tyranny of a divine desire, a pressure of intolerable force weighed on his unbowed head and stubborn breast. Light, like a burning tongue, licked up his thoughts. Light was a luminous torture in his heart. Light coursed, a splendid agony through his nerves. His darkness muttered, perishing in her blaze. Her mastering word commanded every limb and left no room for his enormous will that seemed pushed out into some helpless space and could no more re-enter, but left him void. He called tonight, but she fell shuddering back. He called to hell, but sullenly it retired. He turned to the inconscient for support, from which he was born, his vast sustaining self. It drew him back towards boundless vacancy, as if by himself to swallow up himself. He called to his strength, but it refused his call. His body was eaten by light, his spirit devoured. At last, he knew defeat inevitable and left, crumbling the shape that he had worn. Abandoning hope to make man's soul his prey, and force to be mortal the immortal spirit. Afar he fled, shunning her dreaded touch, and refuge took in the retreating night. In the dream twilight of that symbol world, the dire universal shadow disappeared, vanishing into the void from which it came. As if deprived of its original cause, the twilight realm passed fading from their souls, and Satyavan and Savitri were alone. But neither stirred. Between those figures rose a mute, invisible, and translucent wall. In the long, blank moment's pause, nothing could move. All waited on the unknown, inscrutable will.